everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. And in the studio today, which is about 2,000 miles away from where I am, my colleague, Steve Ailey. He's a vice president of research or something like that.
Professor in biology as well. But good morning, Keith.
Well, good morning. And we have a very special guest, and the name is Doma Sering. And Doma is the United Nations ambassador from Bhutan. And we've done several programs over the last 25, 30 years about Bhutan, different aspects. And so, Doma, we're in El Paso. We know quite a bit about Bhutan, but the rest of the country, much less so. So welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And I hope you're having a lovely stay in El Paso.
Absolutely.
Before we get into what does science and technology hold in the future for a country like Bhutan, I'd like to find out a little bit about Doma. How did Doma Sering become an ambassador? Did you grow up wanting to do something like this, or did you grow up like a lot of people wanting to be a doctor or a teacher or just a farmer?
Well, thank you very much, Keith. Yes, I have the great privilege of representing my country at the United Nations, where I serve as Bhutan's permanent representative. It's a deep honor and privilege, as I said. As far as how I came into this position, I must let you know that I'm a career foreign service officer and a civil servant. And in Bhutan, joining this foreign service and the civil service in general, I would say is largely a calling. It arises out of a deep desire to want to contribute to the development of the country and wanting to give back to society, make a small contribution in advancing the well-being of our people, and perhaps also to thank and express as an expression of gratitude for our leadership, our king and country, who has done so much to bring us to where Bhutan stands today.
So, I mean, is that something that you were picked out then at a very young age for a very special education? Your English is impeccable. And so this is not something that has just happened in later life. You've been training for this since I think you were quite young.
Well, not quite. I did have the opportunity to study in the United States in the East Coast, and that is probably where I managed to pick up the English. To qualify for the civil service in Bhutan, one must sit for the civil service exams, and then there's a selection process to get into the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
So it's a tough competition, I can imagine.
Yes, it's quite a rigorous selection process, first to get into the civil service, and thereafter, of course, to join the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and to serve as a diplomat. It is one of the preferred career routes that many people aspire to, and I've been very fortunate to have this opportunity.
Jolly good. Well, congratulations on going through that rigorous training and getting to the position that you now hold.
Thank you.
Now, this is a program about science and technology. First of all, do you have any particular background in any of that? Or do you have some hobbies? Or is there something that you can bring to that position concerning science and technology? Or are you learning about what science and technology can offer Bhutan into the future?
Well, I must start off by admitting that with regard to these issues, it's been a very steep learning curve. You can imagine with the broad agenda of the United Nations that there's always opportunity to engage on many different topics, ranging from peace and security to development issues, gender, etc. And each new opportunity brings with it the opportunity to keep learning more and more about these new issues, new and emerging issues.
So tell us a little bit about then, you know, like you say, you've got to learn it. It was a steep learning curve for you. For the average person in Bhutan, presumably it was somewhat steeper. And how are you trying to address bringing the knowledge of what science and technology can offer to a small country that's developing like Bhutan. How do you go about spreading the word, so to speak?
Well, I should start off by saying that Bhutan is a small, landlocked, least developed country located in a very sensitive geographical region in the Himalayan mountains. So we are extremely sensitive to any impacts of climate change and along with that, risks of natural disasters. I think for a small developing country like Bhutan, it's very important to recognize the significant challenges that we face in terms of climate risks, its impacts, including natural disasters, the dangers of looming danger and threat of glacial lake outburst floods. We are also located in one of the most geologically sensitive areas of the world. I believe we are identified in seismic zone 5, which is particularly perilous. So recognizing the challenges that we face, it is quite evident that we must seize any opportunity that science and technology can offer to enable us to build our capacities to meet these challenges, enhance our preparedness and resilience, as well as deal with the aftermath should any of these disasters occur.
Well, that's interesting that you've already quantified it. Now, in my head, I know you're a zone 5. I've no idea how many zones there are for that type of incipient risk. Is 5 at the top of the scale, or is there a 6 or a 7? How do we go in that scale?
Well, that's a very good question and something that I would like to learn more about as well. But I would suggest that 5 sounds quite risky and risky enough for us.
That's correct. I just wonder what Southern California is, right? Because that's one of the areas. They don't get a lot, but when they get them, they've historically been quite substantial in terms of at least earthquakes there. Not too many glaciers melting, I believe. Stephen, do you want to butt in here? I can't see you, so...
Well, what I would say, back to one of your earlier questions as to how they are preparing the population to understand, I think one of the parts I've been most impressed with is what I've heard on the development of the education system in Bhutan, starting from the ground up, elementary schools through university. Would you like to comment on that some?
Well, thank you very much. As you may be aware, Bhutan is a welfare state. We have, over the years, invested significant proportion of our national resources, exchequer, to the social sector, including the education and health sectors. In fact, over successive years and five-year plan development plans, 30% of our national budget has been devoted to education and health. This has enabled us to develop a fairly good network of public schools and institutions of higher learning within Bhutan, which are completely free, I might add. And in fact, higher education is heavily supported by the government for students who may not be accommodated within our national education system. The government supports through provision of awarding of scholarships for our students to study overseas. In fact, we do have, thanks to those initiatives, a growing number of students at UTEP who are very happy to be here.
And I think we're very happy to have them, too. It adds a very special character to our university. Let me ask you, if you would, two or three things here that come into my mind. First of all, when do the typical child in Bhutan, when do they start school? Is there what we would call preschool, or do they go through until about 4 or 5 and then start school? And how long do they stay in the education system? 16, 18, 15? I've got no feeling for this at all.
Well, Bhutan has done much to try and promote universal access to education. And in recent years, we have, in fact, been able to achieve universal primary enrollment. The current literacy rate stands at about 71.4, and I believe our youth education literacy rate is somewhere over 90%. As far as pre-primary education is concerned, really driven by the importance of promoting an inclusive society and supporting early child care, development, the government has launched a number of initiatives to establish early child care development centers. So that would be equivalent to pre-primary school education. And we have a system of public schools that provide secondary education up to the 12th standard, following which students move on to either technical and vocational education or university-level education.
So that's just very comprehensive, in fact. And presumably it's there's a compulsory aspect to this. If for whatever reason, parents didn't want their children to stay in school until they were maybe beyond 15 or 16, that would be illegal?
No, it would not be illegal. We don't have compulsory education, but students, of course, are encouraged to stay within the school system for as long as they would like, they can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then one further aspect to that is that I've seen many, many pieces of literature about Bhutan and how rugged the country is and how complex it can be to travel from one location to another, down deep valleys, up all mountain peaks, etc. Is there much in the way of a boarding school program? That is, children in remote villages where it's very difficult to get teachers, for example, perhaps, do they go to schools in the central area and then live in that school, as I did as a child in England?
I think access to education has been prioritized by our government, and because of the priority accorded to promoting education, significant resources have been expended by the government in order to develop infrastructure and establish schools in as many regions of the country as possible. Of course, as you have correctly noted, the terrain is extremely rugged. Settlements can be very scattered, and that means that service delivery is extremely expensive in Bhutan. Nonetheless, schools have been established in every district and going down to penetrating to the block level. Where it's not possible to establish primary schools at each and every village, significant efforts have been made to ensure that every child can have access to schools, can be admitted and enrolled in schools at least within one day's walk.
Okay, you're listening to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Stephen Ailey, Professor of Biology at the University of Texas, El Paso, special co-host today, and the United Nations Ambassador from Bhutan, Doma Tering. We'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Steve Ailey acting as a guest host today with our guest, who is the United Nations Ambassador from Bhutan to the United Nations, Doma Tering. And Doma, we were talking earlier about your need for looking at into the future with the possibility of climate change and then for all sorts of disasters that one can imagine. Hopefully they won't occur. But you have to be prepared. Socially, the government needs to be thinking about these things. Let's ask you this personal question. You've grown up in Bhutan. You've seen changes in your lifetime. Do you have anything to tell us about how climate change is apparently operating in Bhutan?
Thank you, Keith. That's right. Bhutan, as I said earlier, is a small mountainous kingdom. We are located in an extremely vulnerable, our geography is defined as being extremely vulnerable to the negative aspects of climate change, particularly since our terrain is so climate sensitive. In terms of my observations of the impact of climate change, it's undeniable that throughout the world we've noticed significant increase in global temperatures. In Bhutan, as a result, not only have we seen hotter summers, we have also seen an increase in the frequency and severity of irregular weather patterns, and that has brought along with it greater incidence of flash floods, changing weather patterns, landslides, and makes the threat of the occurrence of glacial lake outburst floods even more apparent. And this is due to the receding, alarmingly quick pace of receding of the glaciers back at home. This has many implications in Bhutan. We are seeing the emergence of vector-borne diseases like malaria, for example, at previously unknown higher altitudes, including at the capital, which stands at an altitude of somewhere in the area of 2,300 meters. We are witnessing changes in crop patterns. So it's all very alarming. In addition to which, I must highlight that the two drivers of mainstays of our economy are hydroelectricity generation and agriculture. And these are extremely climate sensitive sectors. So it really poses a threat not only to our daily lives, but also important threats, risks to our economy.
That's very interesting and brings up several different questions, some of which are sort of unrelated. But let's just start with weather patterns. Here in the U.S. and in Britain, where I come from, weather forecasting is always a topic of conversation. Oh, it's too cool today. It's too warm today. Oh, when's the damn rain going to stop or whatever? How do you go about doing that in Bhutan? You must have to rely, like the rest of the world does, on satellite imagery. How do you get that information, and how do you collaborate into the future for making such predictions more reliable?
Well, we have a fairly well-established Hydromet Center in the country, and I understand that they're responsible for generating the climate projections as well as daily forecasts. So we rely to a great extent on them to generate the information. But again, because of our geography and because most of our urban centers are all valley, our cities, towns are all located in narrow, small valleys throughout the country divided by steep mountain ridges, there are many pockets of climatic small zones within the country, and temperature variability can be quite high.
Even in El Paso, I know there can be a substantial difference in the weather on the east side of the mountains or the west side of the mountains. And I would imagine your mountains are a bit taller and the valleys steeper.
Oh, that's right. Our mountains can rise to a peak of over 7,500 meters to the north. And just to give you an idea of the contrasting topography of the country, in the southern belt of the country, the climate is largely tropical, and we have foothills in the hundreds of meters.
That's quite a range.
Believe me, that's quite a range. I mean, actually, since coming to West Texas, 100 doesn't seem as scary as it did, but as a child in England, 100 was just beyond the pale. I mean, that was just unsurvivable. Now, Domi, you made another point that I found very interesting, and obviously it makes common sense. Hydroelectricity generation within Bhutan, is that something that you export the energy? I mean, is that capable of exporting electricity from such heights down to, say, India or somewhere else?
That's right. It is the backbone of our economy and the principal contributor to our national exchequer. We have a hydroelectricity generation potential of somewhere in the area of 30,000 megawatts, of which only 5,000 today has been exploited. Happily, this sector is very clean and green. So we are in a position. In fact, all the electricity generated in Bhutan is green.
So what does your carbon balance look like for the country?
Well, thank you. In fact, I'm very happy to say that Bhutan today is the only country in the world that can pronounce itself not only to be carbon neutral, but carbon negative. And that is largely because of the fact that we have accorded so much importance to protection and preservation of our environment. Our forests, the over 71% of our country remains forested. In fact, they're largely virgin forests. And thanks to our forests, Bhutan acts like a carbon sink. In fact, our forests enable the country to absorb two-thirds more carbon emissions than we generate nationally. So we are actively contributing to absorbing the carbon emissions that are produced in our region.
You also don't have many resources based upon carbon to be consuming. And so you've been put into a rather fortunate position, I suppose. Is there any use for timber? And do you have sort of forests which are, in fact, controlled and farmed, if you like, for wooden product?
Forestry activities exploitation is very carefully regulated within the country. In fact, we have a constitutional provision that requires us to maintain 60% of our total land coverage under forest cover for all times to come. And given that we have over 70% of our country currently forested, of which 51% has been declared as national parks, there's a very strong commitment, and we've by far significantly exceeded that constitutional requirement.
I know we were talking about education, and I'd like to focus on your university students because I met several of them recently, and they were very exciting and very, very knowledgeable, in fact, in their respective fields. What are some of the areas of technology that Bhutan is pushing for their students to be involved in?
Thank you. This provides me a perfect opportunity to share a little bit of information on what we're doing in the exciting field of developing our capacity to exploit space as a driver of sustainable development. I think everyone recognizes that space and satellite applications is an enabler and a catalyst for sustainable development. Space science and technology and their applications, in fact, play a significant role not only in advancing sustainable development, but the data that's been that can be derived from space and information today can inform and enhance formulation of policies and programs that are related to environmental protection, land and water management, urban and rural development, healthcare, climate change, disaster risk reduction, emergency response, energy, etc., etc. It holds tremendous potential, including, I must mention, the importance of space applications to and its derivative data from to natural resource management, studying of snows and glacial patterns, biodiversity, etc. So you can imagine that these are all really vital areas for Bhutan.
What are your students involved in? I don't imagine you have a major launch complex in Bhutan.
That's right. Well, Bhutan is a small developing country. Nonetheless, I think it's important to also recognize that despite our limitations, we have been emboldened to dream big and far. And in fact, that vision was largely driven by His Majesty the King, who has taken a deep interest in launching our foray as our modest foray as a spacefaring nation. You know, in I think it was in 2016 that decision was taken that Bhutan should also join in with other nations and make our initial forays into space. A very exciting new program was launched in collaboration between our College of Science and Technology in Bhutan and Kyushu University in Japan to train our first batch of space engineers. It was a cohort of five young Bhutanese, both men and women, I'm very happy to say, who completed their studies at Kyushu University to become space engineers and to work on an exciting project to develop our very first CUBE satellite program. Recognizing the many benefits that space and satellite technology hold for developing countries in support of advancing sustainable development, we were very happy to launch this initiative. In fact, it was a matter of great national pride for all of us to witness by satellite TV, the launch of our very first CubeSat. In fact, it was called Bhutan 1 in August this past year.
Well, we will have to get you involved with some of our students and faculty in CubeSats as well and further develop.
All right. Well, look, Steve Ailey over there in El Paso and Dolma Tering, the United Nations ambassador from Bhutan. I'm a long way away, so I'm going to let Stephen finish this program off.
Well, thank you very much, Ambassador Domo Tsering. It's been a pleasure talking with you and meeting with you over the past few days, and I'm glad that you could join us here on Science Studio.
Thank you, Keith.